Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Gina Morrow. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. Today, we had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Patrick Borgen, Chair and Surgery Director of the Breast Cancer Program at Maimonides Medical Center, to discuss the incidence, prognosis, treatment, and ongoing research efforts in male breast cancer, as well as the stigma surrounding the malignancy. Although the majority of the breast cancer population is made up of women, males represent 1 in 100 cases diagnosed in the United States each year, and a male breast cancer diagnosis tends to be presented at a later stage and higher grade compared with that in females. Borgen explained that men have described the diagnosis as feminizing and that they have a women's cancer. Public awareness, which often unfortunately comes from celebrity spotlights on male breast cancer, is one factor out of many that will help create a better dialogue of the patient's subtype. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Borgen discussed male breast cancer in further detail, how he approaches treatment in his male patients with the disease, and what can be done to remove the stigma that men often feel with a breast cancer diagnosis.
Thinking about male patients with breast cancer, how common is this? What's the incidence look like?
Yeah, the real challenge here is that often men and their doctors don't know that men can get breast cancer. So male breast cancer makes up less than 1% of all breast cancers. So let's think of the numbers. There are 265,000 women every year who get female breast cancer, and about 2,000 men who get male breast cancer. So a little less than 1% of all breast cancers in men.
The prognosis for men with breast cancer, is it any different than females?
We did a study a number of years ago, which was a 3-to-1 matched pair analysis where we controlled for age and stage and treatment. And what we found was that the prognosis with male breast cancer was actually identical to the prognosis with female breast cancer. However, there's a caveat. And the caveat is that there's often a delay in diagnosis with male breast cancer. Again, sometimes the patient or their doctor just doesn't consider male breast cancer in the differential. And so there's also a relatively smaller envelope of tissue when we compare the male breast to the female breast. So the incidence of nipple involvement or the incidence of muscle involvement is actually higher in men than in women. So if we control for those factors, it's really very similar to female breast cancer.
And do the men experience any types of different symptoms than females typically do with breast cancer?
The symptom question is the key question. That is the number one question. What should a man look for? And there are two things that are a warning sign for male breast cancer. The number one is bloody nipple discharge in the absence of trauma. So spontaneously having blood emanating from the male nipple is actually breast cancer about 90% of the time. The second thing that a man is looking for is a painless mass directly below the nipple. Remember that in the female breast, the terminal duct lobular units, the site of end organ carcinogenesis, are distributed throughout the global surface of the breast. Vestigial duct tissue in men are only behind the nipple. So where a man is looking is directly subjacent to the nipple itself. So bloody nipple discharge and a painless mass directly behind the nipple are the two things a man should watch for.
When you get a male patient with breast cancer, are you approaching treatment any differently with them than you might a female?
The biology is a little different in that, number one, virtually all male breast cancer is ductal. There's really almost no incidence of lobular breast cancer. Number two, male breast cancers are overwhelmingly positive for the estrogen receptor and often for the progesterone receptor. So that gives us a lot of different weapons to use in fighting male breast cancer. The reality is that there's never been a clinical trial in male breast cancer. It's too rare, it's too uncommon. And so what we've had to do is extrapolate from trials in female breast cancer to men. The good news is that it works. The good news is that tamoxifen, our workhorse selective estrogen receptor downregulator, works just as well in men as it does in women.
What would you say are maybe some advances in recent years that have been made to help more men with breast cancer be inclusive, whether it's clinical trials or treatments that have become available?
I think that's a great question. The awareness, the explosion of awareness that we've seen for 20 years in female breast cancer has actually raised awareness of male breast cancer. And so men are pursuing symptoms. And so just from an awareness perspective, we're not seeing as much locally advanced male breast cancer as we used to. Now, in terms of the science of this, probably the most fascinating discovery in male breast cancer is the role of the BRCA2 gene in male breast cancer. About 6% of all male breast cancer is caused by the BRCA2 gene. So when we look at a family where you're doing BRCA1 and BRCA2 testing, the male side of the family, the paternal as well as the maternal side, obviously make a difference. These are autosomal genes, have nothing to do with sex chromosomes. But in terms of the phenotype, the BRCA2 phenotype is unique because it does increase the risk of male breast cancer.
Was it palbociclib that a couple of years ago became inclusive to include men with breast cancer as well?
Definitely right. Remember that for all three of the currently commercially available CDK4/6 inhibitors, they really selectively are used in estrogen receptor positive patients. And of course, men are almost always ER positive. And so almost always FDA approvals extend to both male and female breast cancer because of that realization that we'll never have a randomized trial, it just won't exist. So as drugs have been approved, including anthracyclines, including alkylating agents, including receptor down regulators, and of course, CDK4/6 inhibitors, these apply to men. The other thing that's extremely interesting is that genomic profiling applies to men too. So we did a study looking at men who undergo a 21-gene Oncotype DX assay. So these are men with ER positive, HER2 negative, and node negative breast cancers. And when we did a frequency distribution by recurrence score, it matched female breast cancer exactly. So men derive the same benefit from genomic profiling in terms of really precisely getting the treatment right as female patients do.
Wow, that's very interesting. Are there any differences in survival rates?
So in terms of the survival rates, when we look at matched analyses of male patients to female patients, and we control for things like delay in diagnosis, the survival curves are really superimposable, absolutely one on top of the other. So I think that this is not a fundamentally more aggressive disease. It's a different disease in some ways. There are no lobules in the breast. But when you look at things like amplification of the HER2 oncogene, it really is as frequent in men as it is in women.
So in your opinion, why do you think that male breast cancer is really not discussed as much as it really it should be? Is it almost like an embarrassing topic for men to bring up? Like, what is it?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. Men have described the diagnosis as feminizing. Men have decided, I don't want to tell my boss about this. I have a woman's cancer. It's a shame. When you come to our breast center, the gowns are pinkish peach colored and very cozy and comfortable. And some men have sort of objected to the fact that it is really an environment that's designed, you know, for females, which is all true and unfortunate. But there have been some very, very, very alpha males, if you can use the term macho males, who have gotten male breast cancer and they've done very well. So I think that we've got to continue the dialogue. I think, you know, programs like this are helpful to keep this on people's consciousness. I think if we do that and men continue to be aware that they can get breast cancer, then I think it's going to be much better.
That's great. And it does kind of answer my next question is, how do you think we can bring better awareness to this so it is a more comfortable and overall discussion?
You hate to see celebrities paying a price, but the actor Richard Roundtree had male breast cancer, and he, in my opinion, brought a tremendous amount of positive energy to the message that you can have breast cancer and you can beat it. So I think that public awareness, men talking about it openly, as so many brave women have done, is really important.
Thank you so much. And I know we talked about how there's not really any trials that are just on male breast cancer, but are there any kind of just larger, broader studies just exploring this population, maybe not with a drug, but just other elements of men with breast cancer?
I mean, I think that the era of big data means that we can take data sets and pool them the way that NISQIP does, the National Quality Assurance Program for the American College of Surgeons, where you can take the small number of men treated at each hospital and put them together and really learn lessons. And we're doing that now. So these really large big data studies have been very, very helpful. The interventional studies where men might be randomized to treatment A versus B still represent a logistical nightmare and are probably impossible. In terms of the local treatment, because the tumor always happens below the nipple, there's really no such thing as breast conservation in men with breast cancer. It really is a mastectomy and a sentinel node, or a mastectomy and an axillary dissection. But the role of neoadjuvant therapies, whether they're cytotoxic or immunotherapy or endocrine ablative therapies, these are just as important in men as they are in women. And so someone estimated that a general surgeon in this country would see one case of male breast cancer in his or her career. So clearly, whatever we can do to continue to talk about this important condition is valuable. We also, there was a researcher named Samuel Wells who was responsible for describing multiple endocrine neoplasias 1 and 2, MEN 1 and 2. Very rare syndromes. But what Sam said was, we learn more from our exceptions. We learn more from our rare cases than from our common cases. And I think that continues to be true. And I think there's still a lot that we can learn from male breast cancer. One of the tragic things we've seen here in New York since 9/11 is that men who worked on the pile, men who worked on the area where the towers came down, we've seen a very much higher rate of male breast cancer in men exposed to the toxins from 9/11. And that continues to be true today, many, many, many years later. So there are environmental factors that play a role in male breast cancer. And if we can understand those, if we can dissect those, it'll help us with female breast cancer.
That's so interesting. I didn't know about that. Anything else about male breast cancer that you think is really important to educate the community on?
No, I think you raised all of the tough issues, the somewhat feeling of embarrassment that's really real in men with this disease that often leads to not seeking medical attention. We actually did an interesting study looking at women versus men. If a woman is diagnosed with breast cancer, she talks to an average of 15 different people, neighbors, friends, relatives. She does her homework. Men talk to two people. They talk to their boss and their wife. Men tend to go locally for their treatment. Oh, look, there's a breast center on the corner next to Shoney's. Women will do their homework and they'll travel for their care. Men tend not to do that. And I'm a man, so I can say this. With male breast cancer, sometimes men are not as discerning. So some of that might be fear. Some of it might be the fear of the unknown. I don't know what this means. What does male breast cancer mean? So the more we can do to talk about how curable male breast cancer is, the better we'll be.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Enclave On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps from our State of the Science Summits and Institutional Perspectives in Cancer webinars. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.enclave.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Enclave is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at Enclave and at Enclave SOSS. On Facebook, like us at Enclave and Enclave State of the Science Summit, and follow our Enclave page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Enclave On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Enclave On Air.